Let us turn to the perhaps more positive side of things. The bipartisan index is something that is put together by the Lugar Center, and it's a way of tracking how people are working together in Congress. The bipartisan index measures how often a member of Congress introduces bills that succeed in attracting co-sponsors from members of the other party and how often they turn in co-sponsor a bill introduced from across the aisle. So that's the basis for this. Let's get more into the details and who might be making the list. The former senator who is in charge of the Lugar Center is Richard Lugar. He is a former senator from Indiana, founder of the Lugar Center. The Twitter handle is at the Lugar Center. Senator, welcome back. Thank you for being on POTUS today.
Thanks so much, Tim. Great to be with you.
So I'm looking forward to figuring out which president we're going to have to work with this this wonderfully bipartisan Congress that we're about to talk about today. First of all, on the index, give us an overall sense of how long it takes to put this together.
Well, it takes quite a while, and we're indebted to the Georgetown University people for doing a lot of the spade work. But essentially, the concept was brought together by Dan Diller on our staff and Jay Brannigan and others who have been working with us for a long time in Congress, with the thought that you can gauge how well somebody is going to be effective in Congress by how many co-sponsors that senator or member of the House gets on bills introduced, or correspondingly, the willingness of people to reach across the aisle to find legislation that they want to hook up with, because this is the way Congress works. There has to be not only a majority, but sometimes with a filibuster, much more than a majority, for laws to get passed, starting with budgets and appropriation bills, spending bills, quite apart from other substance.
This year, I guess there are a few more who actually make the grade, if I can use that expression. I think, what is it, the positive score for 2015, 38 lawmakers, which compares to 36 for the entire 113th Congress. So maybe there's some progress being made.
Well, perhaps. On the other hand, 137 House members got positive bipartisan rankings, but that's four fewer than the previous Congresses.
All right. So, and also, once again, I think, and frankly, the two senators on top of the list, Senator Susan Collins of Maine, Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, it seems to me that their names have been there before.
Well, they have. And likewise, Senator Joe Donnelly of Indiana is up at the top of the 2015 list with Susan Collins.
And on the House side, who are the top top scorers for the index?
Off the top of the head, Peter King of New York and Christopher Gibson of New York are the tops. Then Kristen Sinema and Timothy Walz, Bob Dole, and Daniel Donovan are the next in line for the current 2015 index.
I know you're not in the Senate anymore, but is it your sense that things have changed at all since the Republicans took the majority of the Senate?
Well, things have changed markedly in the last two Congresses. We've, with the bipartisan index, scaled out the previous 20 years or so to get some baseline. And the last two Congresses have been by far the most partisan. Now, conceivably, this Congress, as you pointed out, may be slightly less partisan, barely, than the previous one. But the previous Congress was by far the worst in terms of lack of bipartisanship. And likewise, lack of good legislation, lack of the basic spending bills or the other ways in which Congress expresses itself and the public expects if Congress expresses itself, where it didn't happen.
Once again, former Senator Richard Lugar is with us, the founder of the Lugar Center. We're talking about the bipartisan index rankings that are out. I wonder, Senator Lugar, given the campaign rhetoric that is that we're hearing now, there seems to be more and more of a sense that candidates are getting elected or at least nominated based on their unwillingness, if you will, to work across the aisle. Does that wind up transferring to their actual term in office? In other words, do you just have to say one thing to get elected, then you can do something else? What, is this a different kind of a world that we're in now where working together is considered disrespectful in some ways?
Well, I'll leave it up to the candidates to express why they finish where they do, but I would just say that, for instance, in 2015, Ted Cruz finished 97 and Bernie Sanders finished 98 out of the 98 people listed. We didn't list the two House or the two Senate leaders, Reid and McConnell. So they were really at the bottom of the list, which means they were by far the most partisan, the most unwilling, really, to reach across the aisle under any circumstances. Interestingly enough, Marco Rubio moved up to number 28 in 2015, considerably higher than he had been before that, which is an interesting situation, that he was really moving to be not necessarily more accommodating, but he was reaching across the aisle or getting co-sponsors in a way the other two candidates were not. I think this does represent the way that they go about the campaign for president, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, and to your point, I mean, when you think about Senator Rubio, he's been getting an awful lot on the campaign trail from Senator Cruz, for example, and Donald Trump for a position he has taken that he seemingly backed off on. He's gone more hard line on things like immigration, where he had early on in his tenure appeared to be working across the aisle. And I wonder if that is in some ways poisoning the atmosphere, because we've got a lot of key Senate races up this year.
It probably has not helped the races that are up this year, quite apart from the fortunes maybe of the candidates for president.
Once again, Senator Richard Lugar with us. Let's talk about these leaders you mentioned, that some of them always appear up there. Is it partly because they represent the states that are a little bit more purple? I look at, for example, Maine, where Susan Collins is from, and we've had Republican, and she is, but she's closer to maybe the more liberal model of a Republican than I say, a Republican from Alabama. And I wonder if it's a product of their willingness to work across the aisle is a product of the states they come from, in the Senate anyway.
Well, let's take a look at the first top one. You've mentioned Susan Collins of Maine, but then for 2015, Joe Donnelly of Indiana was second, Mark Kirk of Illinois third, Joe Manchin, West Virginia, fourth, Chuck Grassley of Iowa fifth, Bob Portman of Ohio was sixth, and Roy Blunt seventh. Now, that's quite a flurry of states coming across: Indiana, Illinois, West Virginia, Iowa, Ohio.
Yeah, and I'm looking at that, and I look at the state, and I say Illinois, Democratic senator and a Republican senator who's up for re-election this year, and I think of, I look at West Virginia, where now we have a Republican and a Democratic senator, although Republicans seem to have some ways taken over that state. In Missouri, you know, that one can go either way. It's not necessarily a totally purple state, so I don't know that where are people like from Texas or from California on that list?
Well, we know with Texas, of course, Ted Cruz is next to the bottom of the list, as a matter of fact. Just scanning quickly, I don't see the California people up very far in the list, at least. So my guess is they're sort of midstream here.
Yeah, but you did mention in Congress Peter King, because he's a Republican.
Yes.
He's a Republican from New York. So that is interesting to see. Well, as we look at this index, and people can check it out online, you want to check your senators, your congressmen, to see where they are on the list, you can go to the website to check it out. I wanted to get your take last, if I could, Senator Lugar, on this idea of we are in a campaign now, and obviously this is going to play out in the fall for those who are up for re-election, especially those 33 or 34 senators who are up for re-election this year. And it's going to play out in that they're going to be asked to support a particular candidate. And if Donald Trump is the nominee for the Republican Party, this is, at this point, kind of splitting things. And I wonder, number one, is there anything in your memory that ever approached this kind of division? And number two, what would you do if you were still a senator?
In answer to your first question, I cannot remember a situation like this one. I think this is really unique. As far as what I would do, I would follow right along the pattern, at least, of disciplined activity in the Senate that I've had, at least as a member. In other words, I feel it's very, very important to maintain a sense of integrity and character with regard to your other fellow members, because they're going to have trust in you. If you're going to get these co-sponsorships and you're going to get your bills passed and you're going to be effective, really, in speaking to the president or the cabinet members or whoever, there really has to be some trust in the integrity of what you're doing and the history of that.
So if you had to say, if you were in the Senate right now and someone said, Senator Lugar, would you support Donald Trump if he's the Republican Party nominee, what would you say?
I think I would leave that to the individual member. I think this is going to be a very crucial test for each member to determine.
All right. Senator Lugar, I do appreciate you being on. As always, thank you for being on the POTUS.
Thank you, Tim.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Former Senator Richard Lugar of Indiana, founder of the Lugar Center, discussing the bipartisan index rankings, which you can check out on the Lugar Center, and we'll get that website to you. By the way, the Twitter handle is at the Lugar Center if you would like to offer your thoughts and your comments on that.